Coming to you from a broken escalator in Times Square, it's The Liberal Arts,
a podcast about postgraduate life and the things we would study if someone were paying us.
Please, somebody pay us.
Hi everyone, I'm Science.
I'm Cleo.
And I'm Rissa.
This is gonna be a mellow episode.
Because we're all sick.
We're all sick.
All three of us.
I'm not super sick, I'm just dead.
You'd think that, like, if we were in the same room often, we would be all sick at once, and that would make sense. But I haven't been in the same room with either of you for...
a couple years.
Years. Ugh. So.
You're sick by sympathy. That's what happened.
Sympathy sick.
Which is weird
because I've got an infection. You've got a virus. And Riss has got... she's just exhaustion.
Riss has got the retails.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Bad case of the retails. So you have a fun fact for us that goes with a song, I believe, Cleo.
I do. The song that no one heard, because that part's going to be edited out.
I will edit that mess out, just like I always do.
I always sing us a song to get the podcast started, and for some unknown reason, it always gets edited out. It's like I can't sing.
It's almost like we have real theme music.
But, anyway, today's song was I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. And Science said that I could do the fun fact today because, A, I can't talk very well for very long, and I've been talking on the phone all day to people. And B, she wants to know what I know about this song.
Yeah.
I'm desperate.
I know almost nothing about this song. I've heard it, like, twice in my life ever.
So, this song is a song that was written by a man named John Rocks. He wrote it in 1953. It was produced by Columbia Records, and when they recorded it, they got a brand new recording artist, a little girl who had just signed a contract with them, 10-year-old Gayla Peeves, to sing this song. They reduced it.
Uh-oh, sorry, wait, pause for a second. Am I supposed to know who any of those people are?
Nope.
No.
Okay, cool. I thought maybe you were, like, name-dropping, and I didn't get it.
No.
Oh, okay. I would have gasped audibly if she was.
Oh, right. Because you would have known
you're
this.
You're not supposed to know.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I'm just throwing out
words. No, thank you for that reassurance.
Go for it.
They released I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas in 1953. It became an instant hit, I think much more probably than they anticipated. Gayla became an instant child star. She got invited to perform on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Dang.
Wow.
And the best part about this is that she really did, as a result of this song, get a hippopotamus for Christmas.
What? Who gave her the hippopotamus?
So Gayla was from Oklahoma City, and at the time, the Oklahoma City Zoo did not have a hippopotamus of their own. And when this song was released, they thought
they just borrowed one from the locals.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have one at all.
Anyway, sorry.
Yes, all the hippopotamus farming that goes on in Oklahoma.
Well-known center of hippopotamus farms everywhere.
Where do you think all these hippos come from, guys?
Really? You think they come from Nebraska or something?
Don't be absurd.
But the Oklahoma City Zoo did not have a hippopotamus. And when this song came out, they thought to themselves, what a great fundraising opportunity. So they started a marketing campaign called, basically, Buy Gayla a Hippopotamus for Christmas. And raised money in her name to purchase their own baby hippopotamus, and they were successful.
They raised
$3,000 to purchase a 300-pound baby hippo named Matilda.
Yes!
And they ceremoniously gave her to Gayla so that she could be given back to the zoo in Gayla's name.
I love it.
And she lived at the Oklahoma City Zoo for over 40 years.
Yay!
I love her.
This is a good story. Matilda's a good name for a hippopotamus, too.
Okay, I do have a question, though.
Yes.
Why? Who wrote this song? Why was John this Rocks. Song written?
1953.
I don't know.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I looked it up. Apparently it's a thing that's frequently Googled because it came up with several different search options. Just, why did John Rocks?
I feel like there's gotta be a story. I feel like it must have been a dare, like it was a drunk bet where they just threw darts and they're like, you gotta write a Christmas song about a hippopotamus. I bet you can't. I bet you can't write a Christmas song with hippopotamus. And he was like, watch me.
I mean, I don't know. It was 1953. They had children hide under their desks to protect them from nuclear bombs.
Oh, so you're saying that in the wake of communist threat and potential end of the world, that asking for a hippopotamus is not out of the question.
I mean,
good to know.
This is what you're saying.
Yes, no, I am a historian. I am a historian, and I am very sick and a little loopy, and so, on the basis of that authority, I'm going to say that that is probably one of the most normal things to come out of the Cold War.
That's fair.
Much more pleasant than, you know, blacklists and trials and all that stuff.
Thank you for bringing us this fun fact at this, the most wonderful time of the year.
You're welcome.
You know, Star Wars season.
Yes.
Star Wars season.
So, Brissa.
Yes.
Do you have a colloquium for us?
I do, yeah. So I wanted to do something a little new this time. But you guys know me. Joan of Arc will be mentioned eventually, so there's that.
I was going to say, are you gonna going to do, like, an abstract impression of Joan of Arc? Because that would be new.
No, not so much. It's more a completely different topic that's only very tangentially related, but it's something that's come up a lot, and something that I heard about maybe a year ago, maybe a little over a year, at a small conference I got to go to about literature and theater and psychology and how they all interact. Anyway, I found it super interesting at the time, but I've never actually found a way to apply it in my research. I've been looking for ways to apply it in my research, but it's technically a psychology topic and not a philosophy one, you know? Anyway, since then, well, the idea, it kind of, you know, it was in my head, but then I had my own thesis to write, so it kind of went away. It came back during a discussion we had a couple weeks ago, and since then, I've just been seeing it everywhere.
It's called confirmation bias.
What? There's a name for it?
It's called confirmation. Yeah,
you should do a colloquium on that. Anyway, the thing I actually wanted to discuss today is they're called parasocial relationships or parasocial interaction.
Oh, yes, we have talked about this.
Yeah, so we have talked about this. Like I said, it's technically a topic in, well, it's been traded around between psychology and sociology. People haven't always known where to put it. But I encountered it in the interaction between psychology and theater. Now, when I first describe them, most people are going to think that parasocial relationships sound kind of creepy. But they're not. Or they don't have to be. I mean, anything taken to an extreme can be bad. But parasocial relationships are really normal, everyday things that happen to everybody. And I assure you that we all have them. Parasocial relationships are relationships which are completely one-sided. That means that one individual has a strong emotional connection to and relationship with another person, but the other person has no knowledge of them and often does not or cannot know that they exist. These relationships are typically formed through interaction with media. Are we tracking yet?
Explain.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
It does in fact sound a little creepy.
It does sound creepy.
I think I know where you're going with this, but...
So most people, when they hear this, are immediately going to think of, like, stalkers, you know? People who get obsessed with a celebrity and act as if that celebrity almost owes them something, when that celebrity might not even know that they exist. Or if they do, very tangentially. But, you know, that's an extreme. Like I said, anything taken to extreme can be. But like I said, most parasocial relationships are completely benign, can even be good. And that's one of the things I want to talk about is kind of, we all do this, I want to say, let's do it well, you know? So first, I just want to say there's a word for this. This is a thing. And then kind of, yeah, talk about how we can manage this in a good way so that it's right. not the first thing we think of is like, ooh, evil stalker, bad guys, you know? Anyway, so the only way I really know how to do this is to start by giving some examples. Examples from studies and then examples from my own life to just kind of explain what this looks like and normalize this idea of parasocial relationships as actual relationships. So there's a couple different types of parasocial relationships. So the most typical types of parasocial relationships are the ones I've mentioned between celebrities and their fans. These days, it's especially true between celebrities who use Twitter and their followers. In fact, in a lot of the studies I looked at, Taylor Swift is like the key example of someone who has people with parasocial relationships towards her.
Really?
Yeah, people who follow Taylor Swift's career and follow her on Twitter often feel like they have this personal connection with her. They get excited for her or sad for her, and sometimes people might even feel like Taylor's talking to them personally, either through Twitter or her music, something like that. For the vast majority of them, though, Taylor has never met them and has no clue who they are, you know? And another really common example that I found was sports fans. Now, there's a lot of other weird psychological stuff that goes on with sports teams and their fans, so I'm not going to lump those all as parasocial, but especially if a fan forms a connection or attachment to one particular player, like when you see someone wearing someone else's name across their shoulders, like on a jersey. Just because you wear someone's name, it doesn't mean they have any idea who you are, but you have associated yourself with them. Like, I mean, I don't wear my friends' names on my shirts.
Should we start?
You don't wear my name on your shirt?
I don't wear
your... I think we should. Let's get
no,
shirts
I don't think
and
so.
Give them to our friends, Hannah.
I think we should. Yes. Yes.
That you'll just be wearing
it's
your
ironic,
own name on your
question
shirt.
Question mark? You should...
What if, no, but if I wore a shirt that said Hannah, people would be like,
that's not just one, but
Hannah?
Two
and
of
be
my
like,
friends.
No, that's my friend. Both of them. The two friends I have.
Yes!
We should get shirts that say Hannah and give them out to
people.
People.
That way you'll know it's the real Hannah.
Oh yes.
We've started a band. That's something
oh,
we've
gosh.
Done.
Sorry. Yeah, jerseys on we don't wear our friends' names.
I just wanted to say how common this is that celebrities and sports people and stuff like that, a lot of people have these parasocial relationships towards them. And it's not stalking. It's just almost a chosen relationship where you care about a person. You invest time and energy towards this person, and they have no idea who you are. And that's fine, and that's how it works. So in my own life, I mean, there are several people who I have parasocial relationships towards. There's even a couple people who I went so far as to include them in the acknowledgement section of my graduate dissertation, and I have never met them. That kind of stuff. It's the McElroys and the team behind Extra Credits, by the way. and I don't mean just that these people's art has changed me. I'm not going to just list every single artist whose work I enjoy. This is people who I feel like I know them. One of the things that made me want to do this talk was a survey that Polygon did. So for those who don't know, Polygon is a gaming news site, and they recently did a survey asking their readers, what do you like about Polygon, to try to improve the site. And they had a lot of, you know, open-ended questions where you could just write up an answer. And so I got to thinking, you know, why do I like Polygon? And a lot of it was that I realized I felt like I knew their content creators. And I looked forward to those people's work. Like, I want to see more of her work. I want to see more of his work, whether it's, like, fun videos or, like, journalistic things or what. I knew each of their content creators' kind of voices, whether I heard those out loud or just in print. And that's the only... I mean, some people do that for lots of different news stories. You check who's writing it. I very rarely check who wrote what story on what news site, except at Polygon I do.
I've been through the same thing. This week I've been trying out all these new podcasts, and a lot of them are actual play podcasts, like The Adventure Zone, which is pretty much my favorite story that anyone's ever told, right? So I'm like, well, of course I like actual play podcasts. Mm-hmm. And it's the fact is that I don't. I don't actually like actual play podcasts very much. I like the McElroy brothers.
Exactly. That's the kind of thing, like the Polygon show, the podcast, I really dislike talk shows where people just sit around and talk about stuff, except I really like that one, and it's because I like the people. And I already liked the people before I went in. But, so yeah, that's a great example. Now, with these celebrities, technically there's a chance, it's a small chance, but there's a chance that that celebrity in question might eventually know who you are. You could meet them. You could become their friend in real life. They're real. They're out there. Your relationship could be significantly less parasocial, either for a long time or even just for a short time. Even if you just met them and got their autograph, for one moment, they knew who you were and that you had this relationship. And they hopefully reciprocated it in at least enough to say hi, you know? So that's a thing. But there's another kind of type of parasocial relationship in which this isn't even part of the question. And there's a couple, I debated where to put this kind of in the talk, because so far we've talked about parasocial relationships with people who are celebrities. Those are people who are real and alive. But that's not the only kind of parasocial relationship that exists. And there are two more I want to talk about. One of them I've seen discussed a lot in the literature. I think it's super interesting, but I wanted to mention another one first, basically because I haven't seen it mentioned in the literature, and I want to get y'all's read on whether you think it's a thing or not.
Ooh, what about research? Excited.
I know.
I'm guessing, and I think I know what it is.
I think you do too. Parasocial is it a parasocial relationship with someone who is dead?
Who was alive?
Who was a real person and died before you ever met them, or possibly before you were born?
Very interesting.
Like, okay, excluding the afterlife, set that aside. Do you think that counts as a parasocial relationship? Because as I started researching this, I started wondering about all these people who I have this very one-sided emotional relationship with, who were real people, but I never met them because they died in 1430, and their name was Joan of Arc. I think it was 1431. I just messed up. Oh, well.
Oh, no. How could you?
In any case.
How dare you?
I know. So, yeah, that was my question, just to stop in the middle here. Do you think it's a parasocial relationship I have with someone like Joan of Arc, or maybe even C.S. Lewis, or something like that?
I mean, I think yes.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. It fits all the parameters. It doesn't say the person has to be either alive or not real.
Yeah, so, I just thought it was really interesting.
Also, there's a...
Sorry?
There is a temptation to think about historical figures, objectify historical people. Mm-hmm. Like you start to think of them as characters instead of as the humans that they were.
Yeah, it is very interesting, because it's also one of those, I only know Joan through, you know, certain things, through historical records and through artistic interpretations. But at the same time, I only know celebrities through current day records and through artistic interpretations, you know?
I like the comparison here with, primary sources from Joan
and
of Arc's
Twitter.
Trials to
Twitter.
Griffin McElroy's Twitter feed.
I mean, yeah.
That's going to be a primary source someday. Maybe not that
Twitter
particular.
Twitter is already a primary source, y'all.
If we're discussing Twitter versus primary sources, can I just throw out there that Joan of Arc is hashtag better than Taylor?
Yes!
How old is that hashtag going to be, though, when we post this, Dad?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
But yeah, so I just wanted to point that out as kind of maybe a sub thing of... I guess they are kind of celebrities in that they were notable enough in history that we still know about them, but not the kind of celebrities who you could ever have a less parasocial relationship with, unless we're going to start talking about the afterlife or the fact that Joan is a saint.
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah, putting that aside,
What are the religious implications of parasocial relationships?
Yeah, no, this is good. Parasocial relationships with saints. That would be really interesting.
Are they parasocial if they listen?
Well, okay, let's just talk about the Virgin Mary. A lot of people have a relationship with her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it parasocial? Maybe not. That kind of thing.
If the Catholics are right and the saints answer prayer, are they still parasocial relationships?
I don't think, because I wouldn't say I have a parasocial relationship with God. That's not a thing. Because it's the exact opposite of parasocial. Because anyway. So, setting that aside. Yeah.
I was just going to ask, so if you have a patron saint, presumably they're more aware of your existence, so it would be less parasocial.
Is parasocial...
That's a big presumably right there.
Are parasocial relationships a spectrum?
Maybe. I hadn't heard them phrased that way, but the idea is that it is one-sided, right? So, if I met Gryffindor...
Joan of Arc.
Would I have a less parasocial
relationship
with him?
Use me. I met Sidney McElroy this weekend.
Yeah, do you have a less parasocial relationship with Sidney McElroy than you did 2 weeks ago?
I don't know, it depends on if she remembers me, right?
I guess it does. I don't know. But yeah, so these are the kind of really interesting questions
that
come up with these relationships. Okay. Yeah. But like I said, half of why I wanted to do this was just to tell people, hey, there's a word for that, and those are real relationships. But I've been putting off my favorite part for last in this. So my favorite type of parasocial relationship, the one that I find really interesting and would love to do more research on, is parasocial relationships with fictional characters.
Yes. How you introduced the idea to me, actually.
I have a lot of these, and we've discussed them, too. If you've listened to the show, you have heard me talk about these. You've had me talk about how I am in love with Wonder Woman, how Eleven from Stranger Things is my child, all that stuff. About how Aragorn shaped my childhood and Commander Shepard my early 20s. Those are all parasocial relationships. Because Wonder Woman, Eleven, Aragorn, and Shepard do not, and in fact cannot, know who I am. They don't know who I am to them, who they are to me, how much they mean to me. It doesn't matter if I shout it at them, at the screen. They can't hear me because they are, one, not real people, and two,
TV screen.
Yeah, I'll say that. And they're generally, I think, less aware of me than a celebrity would be. So a celebrity generally wouldn't know that I exist. But celebrities are, one, real people, and two, generally know that they have an audience, at least in some vague, anonymous audience way. And I am among those audience members, the public.
Right.
Whereas fictional characters very rarely know that they have an audience. I'm not going to say never, because Deadpool exists, but very rarely are aware that they have an audience.
Can I throw a fun kink in this?
Go ahead.
Oh, please do.
If you have ever been to a theme park to meet someone portraying one of your favorite cartoon characters.
This is a very good point.
Yeah.
When you worked at Disney, you sent me a video of Aladdin and Jasmine saying hello.
Yeah, to you.
To me.
But it is fun because if you're at a place like that, you have the character, the established fictional character who's part of a fictional world being brought to life by multiple people.
Yes.
Some of whom, if you're like me and you're down there for a while, you grow to enjoy interacting with certain people who portray that character more than others.
So there are some Peter Pans who are better than other Peter Pans.
Or that you just go often enough that you see them and you feel like you have a connection, not just to Peter Pan, but to that Peter Pan. And so it is this really weird, it's almost like a double parasocial relationship.
No, actually, this is one of the questions that really interests me, and that's a great way to bring it up. Because there's this weird thing, because the way fictional characters exist is really different from the way people exist, right? Because a person just is. And they are them. And the only real question we have is whether the person and the kind of face they show their audience are the same or not. But with characters, there's this whole other question. What constitutes a character in the first place? So one of the things
is the person playing the character in any real sense that character?
Exactly.
Or are they just a person?
Yes. Are they,
performing a behavior.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, goodness. Why is it all I can think of is historical fictions? I was going to use an example, but then I realized that Alexander Hamilton was a real person. Why can't I think of anything that's not historical fiction or animation? But yeah, so that's a really good question. Like in theater, is every performance is different, right? But they're all kind of the same character, the same story. So, so one of the questions that I would actually really like to actually do further research on, one of the kind of forerunners for if I ever do a doctorate, will be what constitutes canon in fiction? And what does that mean? So who
Not
gets
JK
to decide?
Rowling's Twitter.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. Does that constitute canon? Why not?
No.
Okay. Why not?
Because I don't like it.
Okay, that's not the best answer you could have.
No, you're right. It's terrible. Like from a philosophical standpoint, that's
terrible.
Really bad.
But there's a lot of stuff that gets really weird there. But yeah, so what constitutes fictional characters? We can have relationships with them, apparently, because we do. But it's this weird thing because it's like, well, what do you count as that fictional character? Especially in characters who appear in multiple works. So serial fiction is something I'm really interested in. And then Star Trek's good.
No, like, Kirk is in two universes now. Like, there are two timelines.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I hate it.
Can you have a relationship with one Kirk and not the other, or...
I do have a relationship with one Kirk and not the other. Chris Pine Kirk is a good actor, but a bad Kirk.
But yeah, so these are the kind of questions that really, really interest me. And I haven't actually sat down and written up a colloquium that is my master's thesis yet. I might do that someday, but just as a little taste into that, I consider video games to be significantly similar to serialized fiction because of the way they are different every time someone plays them. So I have a parasocial relationship with Commander Shepard, and so does my old roommate Caitlin. But our Commander Shepherds are different from each other. So do we have a parasocial relationship with the same person? In one sense, yes. In another sense, no. And that's in a much more real sense because this character is a fictional character from a video game. There's also the question of, okay, but in the video game, you control that character.
So do you have a parasocial relationship with the version of you?
Yeah, exactly. Is it parasocial? Are they aware of you? I don't think so, but you're controlling them, that kind of thing. So it's a really different type of relationship. Most parasocial relationships can be thought of almost like friendships. So, you know, one of my big questions would be, are video game parasocial relationships between the player and player character exceptions to this or not? I don't know. Probably not, to be honest, but it's a question worth asking. So yeah, just questions about authors, the power of authors to shape their characters, the role of the audience, the role of fan fiction, that kind of
for
thing.
Sure.
So yeah, I think fan fiction is big, and I think that it's really worth considering, especially like, okay, so Disney World has people who play these characters, right?
Yeah.
So
no,
you walk
all
up
the
to,
characters
just...
exist in real life. They're there
oh,
in their own
sorry.
Universe. They have lots and
cool,
lots
cool,
of
cool.
friends.
Turn off the Disney staff member there, Cleo. We want you back.
I don't know what you're talking about. Peter Pan is real. I've met him.
Okay, so, no, let's just continue this. I walk into Disney World and start talking with Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. And
unless you're
something
me.
Happens.
In what? Which the first time you walk up to him, you just kind of stand there dumbfounded and don't say anything.
Okay, but for the sake of argument, let's say I walk up and talk to Peter Pan. Something happens. It doesn't really matter what. Something happens. We talk about something. And that's a thing that Peter Pan did. We'll just say that that character did that thing. Versus someone writes a story in which Peter Pan does something.
Mm-hmm.
Are either of those canon things? Why not? Which ones are? Like, who gets to determine this? This was brought to my attention originally in, I have to name drop this person because she really brought it up.
While you're finding that, I will say that if you meet a character in a theme park like that, they will never do anything that's outside the established canon in film or in print. Mainly in film, because that's who they are portraying.
So yeah, so that's like... but that's another big question. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things I really want to study is serialized fiction that comes in different media. So, like, there are so many Star Wars books, y'all.
So many.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Are they all canon? Can we just assume that everything in the books is also true in the movies, or not? What happens when they contradict? Who gets to decide? That kind of stuff. Super interesting. I found the lady whose name I wanted to drop, though.
What's her name?
So, I originally heard this in a presentation by Jennifer Barnes. She's a psychology professor, I believe, at the University of Oklahoma. She's actually done a TED Talk on this, so definitely look that up if you can.
Yeah, we can link to that.
Yeah, and one of the things that she talked about in the presentation I got to see was about Harry Potter fanfiction, and specifically Pottermore. And about how she said, what was the comment she found? She had been studying this for a little while, and it's about the way fans react to additions to canon they don't like. So the fact that you mentioned J.K. Rowling's Twitter account is actually really relevant. Because she said, what was the comment she found? It was, so if you don't know what Pottermore is, it's this other site where J.K. Rowling has posted some of more information and stuff into her characters. Things she says never made it into the books, but that she had in her head, like, while she was writing them. And some people were very disappointed by these additions to canon and didn't want to accept them. And she said she found one comment...
Ilvermorny.
Yes. She said she found one comment that seemed to particularly well sum up this issue of someone reading some of the additions on Pottermore and saying, well, now she's just making this all up. now she's just making things up. And it's just like, yes, she is. Hogwarts is fictional.
She always has been.
She made up the whole thing. But there's something to this. There's something to the feeling that, well, this is more just made up. It's more fake. It's more fake than the rest of it. That kind of thing. And it's because people do have these relationships. And what they're saying there, say J.K. Rowling said that Harry said something that was out of character. Just by calling it that, by saying, hey, that's out of character for Harry. What I'm saying is, I know Harry better than J.K. Rowling does. I know he wouldn't say that. She thinks he would. She's wrong.
I have had this exact experience.
Yeah. So anytime that someone acts out of character, what you're saying is, my parasocial relationship with this character is strong enough that I understand their character, and I understand that this is not a thing that would happen unless something was very wrong. And if it's never explained within fiction what is wrong, then it's just bad writing by someone who doesn't know the character as well as you do.
I think that happens a lot.
Who happens to maybe be the creator.
Yeah, who might be the person who invented the character.
Oh, wow.
The reason we're able to say these things is because we have these parasocial relationships. If we didn't, we wouldn't care. If we didn't have parasocial relationships with fictional characters, then anytime something happened, we'd be like, okay, that was another thing that happened in the story. We wouldn't be able to have this feeling of, I don't think they would do that. That seems out of character.
So the fact that these parasocial relationships exist are the reason not why there's so much fix-it fic in the world.
Exactly. And I have written my fair share of that. The reason I stopped watching Doctor Who was because I felt it was so poorly written and out of character. Because I had a parasocial relationship with the character and then was let down by them. That's actually really interesting. One of the things that Jennifer Barnes has been researching is breakups with parasocial relationships. This is when a character either A, dies, or B, disappoints you so much that you stop liking them.
Ooh.
And what that does to you, kind of almost psychologically, because... But yeah, so that's actually really what I wanted to point out, is that parasocial relationships are a lot like friendships. And they can have a lot of interesting effects on us. They can go through a lot of weird stuff. Like I said, especially, you can have a parasocial breakup. You can have different types of parasocial relationships and different levels of parasocial relationships with fictional characters. And I think it's really, really interesting what we do with these characters. A lot of times when people have parasocial relationships with a character, they then start writing fiction starring that character. That's a thing that a lot of people do. And it's just super interesting. But I said at the beginning, I wanted to say not only that this was a thing, but that this is a thing that we can do well or poorly. And so that's what I also wanted to look at. It's kind of like parasocial relationships tend to be intentional relationships. Relationships, we get to choose where we partake of these things. If you don't like a celebrity, don't follow him on Twitter, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
If you don't like a fictional character, don't read their books. If you do, read more of their books, you know? So you get to be very intentional about most of these. There's probably some case in which that's not the case, but for the most part, you get to choose. And you get to choose who you surround yourself with. When I say they're like friendships, I really mean that. They create this mental environment. And it's a part of our mental environment we get to pick. So be careful. You get to pick which shows you watch, who you follow on Twitter, all that. So be intentional. Not only good people, but also this is something that Jennifer Barnes actually points out in her TED Talk. Look around at the circle of parasocial relationships which you have found yourself in and ask yourself some challenging questions that, by the way, you should also definitely be asking about your in-person real-life friends. Who is left out? For instance, is everyone in this parasocial friendship group of mine white? If so, maybe try and change that. Go find other fictional characters. And especially, maybe even look at the authors of those fictional characters. Are all of them white? Maybe try to change that one, too. These are voices that you get to pick. So don't just pick voices that look just like you. It can be unhealthy. And I don't just mean that in the extreme case of remember that these are all fictional, that kind of thing. Don't stalk people. Obviously, don't stalk people. Obviously, remember what's fictional and what's not. I don't need to say that. Also, be intentional, because these things can be really good. I feel like parasocial relationships can be a way in which we just magnify the things that are good to us, you know?
I have a question.
Yes.
You talked about something that wasn't talked about, which is, can you have a parasocial relationship with a dead person in history? Can you have a parasocial relationship with an animal?
Yes.
That's a very good question. I guess you can. Right?
Does this animal know that you exist?
No.
Which
so,
animal?
So, like, I have a parasocial relationship with every dog I see.
Yes.
Because I love them.
Well, that, and just, I'm thinking, when you talked about looking at some of the biggest parasocial influences in your life, my mind immediately leapt to a series of books that I read over and over and over again as a child, in which my two of my favorite characters were animals. One was a lion, one was a mouse.
Are they anthropomorphized to the point in which they are characters who talk and stuff?
Yes.
Well, they're basically people. It That's doesn't matter that they're not human. Means. That'd be like saying you can't have a parasocial relationship with Spock because he's part Vulcan.
That's true.
No, it doesn't matter if they're human or not. It matters if they're people or not. Okay. And I don't know, maybe it's possible to have a parasocial relationship with a non-person, like every dog on the planet.
So if you have a pet fish, do you have a parasocial relationship with them?
Don't know.
I don't think they really know you're there.
Oh, well, that goes into realizing that other beings have consciousness, which is actually something that they do study in zoology.
Nice.
So, like, you can have a real live relationship with a very, like, with a parrot. Because a parrot knows that you have a consciousness, and it's different from their consciousness.
Yes.
Elephants are the same way. And
then you have the question, like, okay, it can't be just consciousness, because I hate to break this to you, but Harry Potter doesn't have a consciousness.
What?
What?
No.
And it can't be just self-awareness, because again...
I honestly, that thought never occurred to me, Rissa, and it's kind of blowing my mind. I need to sit down.
Just for the record, Daniel Radcliffe does.
I need to sit down more.
So
I'm already sitting.
But yeah, and then, like you said, there's other things. Like, if we go back to the theater thing, there's Hamlet, and then there's David Tennant's Hamlet, and Benedict Cumberbatch's Hamlet, and Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet. And are they the same Hamlet? Are they not?
I've seen two different Charlie Browns on the stage. And both of them were good. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting.
And I mean, it gets even weirder when you do get into... This was actually a question I got to ask Barnes. And she, at the time, was just like, wow, that's interesting. I don't exactly know where that fits. Because what I asked was, what about historical fiction? Because there's a difference between Alexander Hamilton and... Alexander Hamilton in the musical Hamilton, and Lin-Manuel's portrayal of the character Alexander Hamilton in the musical Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. You're
those
right.
Are three different things.
So that's very good.
I feel like I have a parasocial relationship with Alexander Hamilton...
Which one?
Does it have to meet... Do I have to have a parasocial relationship with the historical Alexander Hamilton to have one with the fictionalized Alexander Hamilton? That kind of question. It gets real weird. So, like, in that play I talked about for forever, St. Joan, that was Gemma Arterton. That was the actress. And I watched another version of it that was this black and white film, and I did not feel any relationship towards this St. Joan. But it was the same
character.
Despite
the fact that you have a very real parasocial relationship
with the actual St. Joan, and also with Gemma's St. Joan, but not with this one.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But that goes back to my question.
Because fiction is really weird.
I think that combines my question and yours, though, because I'm asking, can you have a parasocial relationship with a character and a portrayal of the character by a certain person, and you're asking... At what point are we allowed to say this is in character and this is not? With characters that either aren't real or aren't alive.
Yes.
This is a whole different colloquium in my head.
I know. I'm sorry. This kind of spiraled out into what is fiction. But we always said that this was about, you know, what we wanted to study. And this is kind of what I want to study, is fiction and our relationship to it. I'm having a lot of trouble putting the social relationship part into my philosophy studies. But a lot of these questions about what constitutes canon and instances and things like that are a lot of this has gone into my master's dissertation. It may be that the next couple colloquiums I do will actually just be my master's dissertation. If you guys are cool with that.
Always, babe.
We've been asking you to do that for a while.
So we'll definitely talk about this a little more. I kind of wanted to use this as like a segue there. We have real, actual relationships with fake people. And that's a thing which exists in psychology. And it's not that weird. I wanted to mention, there's a lot of people in history have viewed these as kind of a bit judgy. Like, as if these were a problem. They were a symptom of something. Like, only lonely people make parasocial relationships. You know? That's not the case. Parasocial relationships can be really good, but only if we're intentional about them, we realize what they are, and we use them well, basically. So yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to get at. I want to see if I have any more
notes. Oh my gosh, Rissa, I have a parasocial relationship with my own characters.
Yeah, you do.
Frick.
They are not aware of you.
I know.
So what's,
unless I make them
well,
aware of
that's
me.
What gets really interesting is characters like Deadpool.
Yeah.
Is Deadpool actually aware of his authors and audience? In fiction, he is.
That's so
I
weird.
Love works of art that break the fourth wall. I love them. They're amazing. But yeah, so that's a lot. This has been my most disjointed colloquium yet. But these are the kind of topics that I actually do find super interesting. What constitutes fiction? How does that affect us? That kind of thing. But mostly, I wanted to say, hey, parasocial relationships are a thing. They're a good thing. They're a thing that you, listener, definitely have. And that's okay. But that also, hey, you get to pick these things. So pick good ones. Pay attention to what you're putting into your head. And pay attention to what you're not putting into your head. Because maybe you're missing out on some real cool people that you could make friends with. But yeah, there's this whole idea of kind of the book as a friend, the poem as a friend, the poet as a friend, the author as a friendly voice that I find super interesting.
This has been food for thought. I love how you ended with the call for action. Thank you, Rissa.
Yay!
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. This is what happens when I don't script things.
It's not going to sound bad, I promise.
Okay, thank you for saving us with your editing magic.
You're welcome.
It is time for the thing we have all been waiting for. It is time to talk about PodCon.
No, I mean, yes. But, yes. I mean, this segment is the post-grad problem, but I am
definitely 100%. Oh, I thought that was your post-grad problem.
What? The PodCon?
I thought your whole thing was going to be about PodCon.
Oh, it is. It definitely is.
I thought in lieu of post-grad problem, we were just talking about PodCon.
Oh, no. What I misunderstood. Talk about is how I have... Yeah, I have... I've actually... I'm here to help you guys because I've solved a post-grad problem. Just solved it.
What yes. sorcery is this?
Uh-huh.
Are we allowed
to?
This?
I have... Oh, yeah. Oh, we're allowed to solve... We are encouraged... I'm told we're encouraged to solve our problems.
Happy are those who hear their detractions and put them to mending.
Thank you for that.
That was much
to
do about nothing.
So serve God, love Rissa, and mend.
Yay! Yeah, no, I've solved your post-grad problem for you. So
Shoot.
You're welcome.
All of them?
I have just one, but
Dang
it's a very
it.
Big one.
Okay.
Okay.
Networking. I've solved it.
Ooh.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I'm now
I'm
a master
impressed.
At networking.
Please come fix my networks.
not like technologically.
And
don't tell me
to turn them off and on again, because that's
socially. No.
Can you imagine socially. Trying to implement that in a social setting?
Turning off and on again?
Are you kidding me? I've totally done that.
I was going to say it involved faking your own death, but whatever.
Well, that'll make a great first impression on everyone you want to network with.
More like a last impression. I've cracked it. I've cracked the code. So, I hated the idea of networking going into PodCon because mm-hmm. it just seems so disingenuous. Am I alone in this?
No.
Like, going somewhere
yeah.
to network seems like schmoozing and flattery and
no,
lying,
disingenuous is a very good way to put that.
Yeah. It's just like everybody knows that you're not there for the other person.
You feel like you're using them.
Yeah, and you feel like everyone's got an agenda and it's not comfortable.
Cool. I forgot. Now I have to do a whole colloquium on ethics.
Yes, you're going to do a colloquium on Kant, and it's going to be great.
Kantian deontologic ethics. Sorry, go on about
Yay.
Networking, please, because
no,
I need
good.
Your help.
Okay, so I talked to my friend and mentor, Connie. What's up, Connie?
Hi, Connie.
Word to Connie.
Word to your Connie. I don't know, man.
You people and your slang, how old are you?
I don't know.
I would do this podcast with a couple of grandmas. No offense to my grandmother, either of them.
I like how the plural of that was, like, the plural of grandma was grandma.
Yeah, sorry. It kind of faded out on the S.
Wife's grandma.
Grand am I.
So Connie helped me out here with some pointers. She said a few things. She said, first of all, everybody there is also there to network. But that True. Means that you know, that doesn't mean they want to impress you. You don't have anything to prove. They're there to make contact, to connect with people. And so if you reframe it, first of all, as not, like, using people, but as making connections with people, that starts to help. That's the first thing.
Okay.
But the second thing, she said this and I was overwhelmed with self-consciousness and saying, but I'm kind of weird and a nerd and I don't know about them. You know, like, feeling very self-conscious, very vulnerable.
What about it?
She said, like, that's how I feel when I think about connecting with people who are very good at things. Yes.
I am following this conversation now.
Okay. And so, and then the next piece of advice she gave me is to say, well, you know, everyone else is kind of in the same boat. Don't forget that when you make connections with people, you're making connections with, well, people. Like, they're humans. Yes. There's another human. You're speaking to a human. You're not talking to a networking machine. you're not trying to make professional contact with a robot or a wall. It's a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, guess what you do with people? You converse with them. You ask them about their interests and good questions, and, like, imagine that. It's like having a conversation.
What?
It just so happens that having a conversation, it's having a conversation about something that you are both interested in.
That's a very good type of conversation.
That's a good conversation.
So I go to PodCon, and first of all, it helped that everyone at PodCon was just amazing and lovely, and that we were all there with the full understanding that no one gets into podcasting to make money. so nobody's there like, I want to be famous.
That's not
time
what,
to hustle.
That's not what we're doing.
That's not, yeah, no. Cleo, I hate to break it to you, but we are making no money.
We're not?
Please, someone pay us.
Please,
it's in the
pay
pitch,
us.
People.
Oh my gosh. It's like I've gone from the humanities to the humanities.
We are the liberal arts.
All of them.
All of them. Yeah, so nobody was there to, like, hustle and be famous and make a bunch of money. Like, even famous podcasters still have day jobs, right?
Sorry, did you just say a lunch of money?
Oh, yes, sure, a lunch of money.
That's how much we're making on this, guys. Enough for lunch money.
The second thing is like, I found it helpful to me, like, be honest about what it is you want. So I went to a speed networking session, which Oof. Is we all sat in a circle around table. I know, it sounds terrifying. It sounds
yes,
utterly
it does.
Terrifying. But what we did was say your name, say what you got to offer and where you're from and what you're looking for. And
Dang.
Then, so, and, exactly. And that's all. And it was like, hello, I'm Hannah. I do a podcast called The Liberal Arts. Here's our tagline. Here's a card for you to check it out. And then I said, I'm trying to make a fiction podcast, so I would love any pointers about how the heck you do that.
Nice.
And I got a lot of really good advice from excellent people, and I met so many good people. And, like, once you realize that networking is about, you know, making friends with other humans, it stops being disingenuous and starts being extremely useful and extremely encouraging. So, suffice to say, I had a great time at PodCon, and you're welcome for solving all your networking problems.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thoughts, questions, concerns?
Yeah, I have one. It might not be one you can answer right now, because this is so fresh. Because
mm-hmm.
one of
no,
my problems with,
now.
With networking... Okay, I'll ask the expert then. say I'm at a conference, I successfully network with several people. We even maybe exchange information, and I, miracle of miracles, remember to write it down somewhere. I will actually find it later.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year passes. I feel weird getting back in touch with them, especially if
okay.
they are further in the field than I am. Like, say they're a professor and I am a student. I feel weird contacting them.
All right, so that's the second step of networking, is the follow-up.
Yeah, okay, uncomfortable.
So I collected a stack of cards. I posted a picture on the website and on our Facebook. I collected a stack of cards and I wrote down a bunch of names. And I actually, like, got into a writing group with some folks.
Nice.
Some folks that I really look up to and admire. So what do I do with all that information? I follow up. I followed up the next day, if it was possible, or the day after that. And if it wasn't, that was okay. I followed up the day after that. Like, I no one's going to look at you funny for saying, hey, we met at PodCon. I really enjoyed what you told me. Thanks for that. And then they remember you. And then a year later when you need them again and you're like, hey, remember when we met that one time? They have, you know, the Twitter DM history to remind them, oh yeah, you're the person who told me that you really admired my musical composition in this podcast. Or, oh yeah, you're the person whose podcast is so much like mine. You know, nice. That kind of thing.
Okay.
It's, you follow up with them as soon as you can. And if
so
possible,
I've already mixed the boat on one of my conferences that was like half a year ago.
Not necessarily. You could still follow up. You say, this is where we met. This is why I thought of you. I have a question for you. And usually people are glad to help. Like, even if they don't necessarily remember meeting you, like, put yourself back in their minds, and they're not going to turn you away unless they're terrible.
Okay.
Are you networking with terrible people?
I hope not.
Yeah, so it's, I don't think that it's, even if the conference was half a year ago, I don't think it would be out of line to send them an email and say, this was really great, I remember this, I don't know if you remember me, but what yes. you said had a big impact on me, here's my question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's okay to be honest, it's okay to say, I'm a little worried about contacting you because I don't know if you remember me, but here I am doing it anyway. Like, honesty and being a little vulnerable is totally okay and actually makes people like you more.
How to make friends and influence people.
For real. Like, that's literally this whole thing. Is be honest, be yourself, and be cool for once.
Just once. You only have to be cool once.
Yep. What if I can't do all of those at the same time?
Go for honest. Go for honest.
Go for honest. This is very good advice.
I mean, I've had that experience when trying to make friends before. I've literally looked at someone and been like, so do you believe in eating ice cream?
What?
We should get ice cream. Just in the sense of
you eating, like turtles? I like turtles! Something's
That's
happening
literally
here!
It. And you know what? If you find someone and you're talking to someone and you're like, yeah, we don't really have much in common, I don't think we can connect here, you can say, it was really good talking to you, thanks for your time, and then leave. You can do that? Because chances are they're feeling the same way. That's allowed. It's chill. And no one's going to fault you for it. So this is how you network. I am an expert.
Good job.
And very humble.
So basically what you're saying is that Connie is an expert and a genius, and you did what she
Connie
said.
Connie taught me everything I know, and I love her.
Good job, Connie.
Thanks, Connie. Should we, since we've talked so much about PodCon, should we segue into the things that I'm into this week?
Yes, the
Dare
things
I
that
ask?
We're into this week.
Girl,
is
I have
PodCon?
A list. Oh, babe, it's PodCon. It's PodCon
can
all the way
I
down.
Can I phrase this as a question?
Please do.
And a request.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to list every single podcast you got a business card for?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
That would take all day.
That would take... We don't have time for that. I don't want to hear myself edit that. Like, no, I'm not going
to
do that.
I don't know if I want to listen to the pre-edited version of that.
I am going to recommend a few, though, because okay. I found some really, really excellent. I want to shout out to three podcasts in particular, because they are very much like our podcast. So if you like our podcast, you should check out their podcasts.
You hear that, Mom? Check out their podcasts.
Yeah, Mom. Oh, by the way, disclaimer to our listeners who might not be used to this. Some of these podcasts have swears.
No.
I know, it's shocking. because we don't swear here on the Liberal Arts, usually.
At least in the edited...
I hope we do! In the edited ones, I'm sure we don't.
And not in the edited versions, you, anyway.
Anyway, so the first podcast I want to recommend is Indoors Women. I met Jen from this podcast at PodCon during the networking thing. This is a podcast about two lady geeks who discuss fiction and fandom. They just did an episode on aliens that was amazing.
Nice.
It's just a discussion of topics, an exploration of tropes. They chat through some things. They're very pleasant to listen to. I love hanging out with them via podcast. One that I absolutely adore, and it's amazing that this podcast exists because it's like our sister podcast. I met Abby and Amy both. They do a podcast called More Research Required, which is all the studies, the scientific studies that no one will ever pay them to do.
Nice.
Yeah, they just basically create a study based on the idea if we had infinite money and zero ethics.
Okay, the zero ethics part worries me a little
bit. Yeah.
Well, okay, there are lines. Like, the last episode that I listened to, they designed a study where you would figure out which way people face in the shower. And they're like, should we film people in the shower? No. The answer is no.
Good decision. Yes.
And then the last podcast I want to shout out to is called HD and the Void. And this is Hannah Davey, yet another Hannah.
Wow.
Hello, Hannah.
So many of you.
Too many Hannahs.
There are so many of us. Too many. An abundance of Hannahs. John Green's next hit novel. but HD in the Void is just, HD talks about astronomy and space.
Ooh.
Because she loves it. And I think that that is so true to the spirit of what we do here. You know, she is not an astronomer professionally, but she loves space. I listened to her episode on the golden record that they sent out on the Voyager probe. It's excellent. It's a very good... I learned something. I learned something worth knowing. It was great.
Nice.
Yeah. And there are so many podcasts I could talk about. I'm going to post the full list to the blog later on this week. A full list of recommendations. There's both fiction and nonfiction podcasts on there, but like... I met so many good people, and I'm just thrilled out of my mind to have so much new listening to do, especially with people who I have met and I like. Like, I feel like we have a
parasocial relationship?
No, a true social relationship. This ain't no McElroy listening. This is friend listening.
Nice.
Is a term that I just coined. Anyway, I had a good time, guys.
I'm glad
that I went. I want to go again next year, and I want to take y'all with me.
I would love that.
I would love to go.
We probably have new listeners this week.
Hello,
new listeners.
Two of us haven't met you, but we love you.
Yes.
That's true.
So you're now part of our own personal parasocial relationship, except we each know...
No, social relationships with one of us and parasocial relationships with two
except we each know, the kind of know that the other exists, so it's...
Is it? Okay. Do they have parasocial relationships with you?
Yes, that could be.
Interesting.
Yes, if you are listening and you want to take this parasocial relationship to a next non-stalker creepy level, or if you want a hippopotamus for Christmas or something equally interesting.
We will not get, just disclaimer, we will not buy you a hippopotamus.
We will
not.
We do not
have money. It has been established that nobody pays us.
You can find us on Facebook, The Liberal Arts, liberalarts@gmail.com, or on Twitter as Tumblr as just Liberal Arts.
We'd like to thank Tristan from Vintage Lab Tech for our music, and Caitlin Thompson, the aforementioned old roommate Caitlin with a different parasocial relationship to Shepard, for our graphics and design. And we want to thank you for listening.
2 weeks from when this comes out, when we would normally have another episode, we're
January
actually going to take,
3rd.
January 3rd. That's my mom's birthday.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Mom.
Instead of having a normal episode, we're going to have a little bit of a shorter one. This is mostly just because we are all so busy over the holidays with people coming into town and also everybody's sick.
And also two of you working retail. Yikes.
Yes, exactly. Also two of us work retail on the holidays are the worst. We're not going to have time to write and record an entire episode, so instead we thought we would just collect a bunch of fun facts and do a short little episode that way. So we hope you enjoy that. We might have to make it a bit more of a thing. We'd love to, instead of just taking random longer breaks than we should, just release more mini episodes and that kind of thing. So we hope you join us then. Until next time, learn something worth knowing.
Coming to you... I messed up.
Please put that one in the episode.